How's it going, everyone? This is Bo Gersnich with another episode of American Memoirs. And I am recording this one a bit on the fly. Today is June 28th, 2024, and last night was the first presidential debate between Trump and Biden. And I'm sure as many of my fellow citizens have, I watched that debate and I watched some of the commentary coming out of the different news streams and on social media and all of that. And I felt a strong desire to record an episode of the podcast to talk about just the immense similarities between this election, the election in 2024, and the 1968 election. So I'm just going to go into that and talk about what I think are the possible next steps in this election process. So yeah, for those who don't know or aren't aware, in 1968, that was the second election, really, of President Lyndon B. Johnson. LBJ was technically in his like sixth year of being president because he had originally served as vice president under John F. Kennedy, who was assassinated in office. So LBJ assumed office, finished that term, ran for one election on his own in 1964. And then 1968 came around, and there was not yet any rules that he couldn't run. I actually still think he could run in today's day and age based off of being elected once and not having more than 2 years of the previous president's term under his belt. So he could run again if 1968 was 2024, but LBJ was in a lot of turmoil. LBJ, there was a lot of comments in those day and age about this economic concept called guns versus butter, guns versus butter model. You know, you can call it what you want, but really people were upset about guns and butter. What that means is the gun side of things, the war in Vietnam at this point in 1968 was going very poorly. It had been going on for many years. And people didn't understand what the purpose of the Vietnam War was anymore. It felt like an endless war that we didn't have any moral authority to be a part of. The 1968 college campus, there's a lot of protests. Primarily, one of the big ones was Columbia, who were protesting the U.S. involvement in Vietnam. On top of the guns problems of like, and you know, this was probably even worse than you know, the wars we have currently going on, because the draft was a thing in this day and age, and so people were proactively being pulled into these wars that they didn't want to be into. You know, they wanted to live their lives in the U.S. and didn't understand why they were sacrificing their life for our wars. And the butter side of things was LBJ had a lot of social changes within his administration, and some of the difficulties that come to play on that was this concept that he was pushing called the Great Society, which was a lot of economic policies focused on building up the middle class and rectifying racial disparities and things like that, that he was trying to build, quote unquote, that Great Society. Both of those things cost a lot of money, and that's why it was the guns versus butters or guns versus butter model, because inflation was high. It was between 1964 to 1968, inflation hit 13% between, you know, the start of his official first term in office that he's elected for and the end of it. You equate that to the inflation between 2020 and 2024, which in those 4 years, that's 21%. It was definitely double digits, but not as bad as inflation is today. And so LBJ just, he was unpopular. He had not necessarily confirmed nor denied that he was going to run again. And so they did have him as a write-in candidate on one of the first primaries, and he just narrowly won that primary. Things weren't looking good for him from an election perspective, and so he bowed out. And that opened up a lot of chaos in the 1968 primary season. And the reason, again, I'm recording this is I feel as though it's very similar to the situation we're in today, where we have these wars that are going on that we're funding and people don't understand why. There's increases in spending domestically. This guns versus butter thing is both hitting the American people in 1968 and it's hitting them in 2024. Joe's performance on the debate was, there'll be probably 20 people that listen to this. So to those 20 people, it was really bad. He could not formulate complete sentences in a lot of his responses. It was seemed like he just lost any ability to confirm that he has the mental bandwidth to finish 4 years. That's, I think, the biggest point that people may not be talking about right now is like he may be somewhat fine or mentally sound in 2024, but what happens come 2028? You know, this is a 4-year term. That's a lot of time to be invested and to work the hardest job in the world, really. It's a unique and difficult role that if you are losing cognitive functionality, will become very hard to do. And I think the last really old president, Reagan, somewhat struggled with that. They kept him behind closed doors, but it wasn't long before Reagan was done in office that he did, succumb to, I forget what diseases he had, but he wasn't doing too hot towards the end. And so the polls are coming out today, and it looks like Trump is really increasing his margin of winning, and there's some public desire for Joe to step aside. And that's very similar, again, to kind of 1968, a little bit different in terms of, you know, the context of why someone would step aside, but feels that the country is in a little bit of a similar situation. Additionally, the political opponent in 1968 was going to be Richard Nixon. LBJ and JFK had ran against Nixon in the past. At the conclusion of Eisenhower's term, the election in 1960, which was Nixon versus JFK, Nixon had developed a personality of almost being like the attack dog. Eisenhower is a president, and he was Eisenhower's vice president from 52 to 60. He didn't like to get his hands dirty as a president. He didn't want to get into the political fray. He was he had military accolades. He was well-loved by the people, and he didn't want to punch down, but he did still want punches to be thrown. And so as his vice president, it's very well known that Nixon was, you know, the attack dog. He was going into debates. He was very vicious, and he had lived that life for a long time, 8 years in, you know, that vice president role. He lost that election in 1960. So he kind of came back for blood come 68. Nixon's style, people will equate it out to what Ronald Reagan would eventually embody 12 years later. And then Trump kind of follows the same thing 30 years after that. It's the similar personality that you sometimes see on the right-wing politics in that they're attack dog-ish, they are aggressive, they're creating a persona that's built on this idea of strength. And so that is Trump's persona in this election, and that is who the presumptive nominee is going to go after. Additionally, in the election of 1968, the Democratic Party was splintered, And they had a third party candidate running for office as well. That guy's name was George Wallace. He was a Southern Democrat, which pretty much this may have been like the last election. Someone will have to fact check me on that. But for a long time, the South post the Confederacy, they were pretty staunchly Democrats, and Democrats would vote with them. LBJ was the first Democrat that you could probably say JFK too. But those two kind of like walked away from the more racist tendencies of the Democratic Party and alienated that part of their base. That base would eventually switch sides and go to the Republicans, but in this election, they remained loyal to a elected Democrat who was the governor of Alabama, George Wallace. And so in the primary season for the Democrats, there was a lot of, infighting. So you have a sitting president who is voluntarily stepping aside. And that voluntary stepping aside opened the door for challenger candidates, and it opened the door for establishment candidates. And challenger candidates are like who Trump was in 2016. It's people on the outside who are not part of the political establishments or the political leadership of the time of either of the parties. It's like they're not in the Senate leading the Senate. They're not in the House leading the House. They're not on the presidential tickets. So they're total outsiders. And they can come in and they can basically, run as kind of like I have these values, but I don't have to abide by a record of any sort. And that is what Bobby Kennedy was. Bobby Kennedy was the brother of John F. Kennedy, who had been president, 5 years prior to this, 6 years prior to this. And so, he served as attorney general during that presidency and in a brief stint for LBJ. He became the outsider. There was another outsider who was very anti-war, Eugene McCarthy. And so these two outsiders were vying for the presidency. And then there was LBJ's vice president, Herbert Humphrey. And Humphrey was the establishment candidate. He was running to be president, but in his current role, he was vice president. And so Humphrey, these two candidates were more anti-war, pro-civil rights. They were able to tap into more of the discontent of the Democratic Party at that stage, whereas Humphrey was more obliged to hold up the LBJ record. So LBJ didn't want to run again. He didn't want to defend that record. But by putting his vice president up and putting him in that situation, basically this guy had to do it anyway. And so the election cycle comes around, and it looks as though after the California primary that Bobby Kennedy is going to, it is likely that Bobby Kennedy is going to take the nomination. And that was not going to be good for, the establishment candidate, which was Humphrey, who was serving basically as a surrogate to LBJ and his record. And it wasn't really good for George Wallace either. In one of the most tragic events, I personally believe, in the 21st century, that night or the next day, Bobby Kennedy was shot in his right after his speech, excited about winning California, which was, a big state. He was shot by a radical extremist who did not believe in his policy towards Palestine. And so Bobby Kennedy was out. He was murdered. He was definitely the candidate that people had fallen in love with. They were excited to support him. And it is incredibly unfortunate that was that happened, because it kind of upended the entire election from there. The problem is I think that the American people are much more smarter, or much smarter. it's funny to say that and mess that up, you know, when I talk about it. But the American people are much smarter than what our political class will choose to tell themselves or believe. And so when a candidate gets basically like put on the agenda themselves without necessarily like the full political and voting support of the people, it doesn't go like incredibly well for the excitement for that candidate. So, and Humphrey will admit that during this period, like he wanted to be the nominee and he said he did not want to win it via, you know, an assassination of Bobby Kennedy. And that was totally the right thing to say. But Humphrey, whether he liked it or not, he became basically like the second best option, or almost like the third best option, because LBJ had stepped down, Bobby Kennedy was assassinated. And so then they were basically just given a candidate that people had voted for in some of the primaries. A lot of the primaries did not. A lot of them didn't get the chance to vote. Some of them, you know, just didn't really do voting like that in that day anyway. But so Humphrey ends up the nominee in convention. And I think since we are past the primary state, you know, on June 28th, when I'm recording this, the primaries are complete for both parties. Joe Biden has secured the nomination from a delegate's perspective. What would have to occur if he was replaced, and I think that that might be, you know, the direction that the Democratic Party takes, is they'll need to replace him in convention. And when they do that, regardless of who it is that they put up, whether it's a candidate who will go up and defend the current administration, like a Humphrey, an example of that would be Kamala Harris, who's vice president right now, would be the exact same thing. You know, Joe steps aside, VP steps up, runs for the presidency. You could also have someone in a more minor position, like a Pete Buttigieg, who's currently the Secretary of Transportation. He could step up and run. He's, you know, both of those candidates have shown presidential ambitions in the past. They had both run and they had both gotten, you know, a somewhat degree of popularity in the 2020 elections. But at the end of the day, like, no matter who the candidate is in this scenario, is they were not primaried by the people. And so the people are not as dumb as maybe our politicians would hope or desire. And so it's going to feel very forced. So Joe is not looking good. And we are now, in the absence of these primary voting, going to be more or less forced into either an establishment candidate like a Hubert Humphrey, or we will get a candidate that can challenge the status quo within the Democratic Party. And some examples of that are like Gavin Newsom or Gretchen Whitmer, who are still within the party holding office. I think that the most interesting option would be Bobby Kennedy Jr. And the reason I say that is because, you know, there is not going to be a lot of excitement. People aren't going to feel as bought in to whoever takes a nomination that they didn't vote for come convention. And it's going to be a very similar situation as 1968. There's going to be a loud, aggressive candidate like a Richard Nixon, who can attack the current state of things, the economics, the guns and butter. It's a tale as old as time. When people are losing money day over day on inflation, they will vote the other way. That is, you know, you can look at polls. The number one thing that people vote on is based off of their own personal pocketbooks. Everything else is second. And so when you have inflation that's high, people are much more likely to pick a candidate that, you know, is trying to offer a different solution. So you have a Nixon, and then you have an establishment candidate, call that Harris or Buttigieg, or even, you know, one of the governors. And then you'll have this third party. In the same way in 1968, where George Wallace was a disruptor of the Democrats, you'll have Bobby Kennedy Jr., who's running as a third party, and he takes votes from both sides, absolutely. But he's polling at about the similar percentage as what George Wallace was back in 1968. 1968, George Wallace was, he eventually took 13.5% of the vote. And that is roughly where Bobby Kennedy is currently polling. And back in 1968, that accounted for 9.9 million votes. A lot of that was geographically condensed into the South. So he ended up actually winning states that could have otherwise went to Humphrey. But Humphrey lost this election by a very, very thin margin. From a popular vote perspective, he lost by like 500,000 votes. And George Wallace took 9.9 million votes. So had George Wallace not run, then Humphrey probably would have won it. Nixon would not have gotten the chance to be elected in 1968. And yeah, so I think it's very interesting, the parallels between these two elections. So I thought that I would personally chime in and describe that. I think, again, if the Democrats are serious about putting up a candidate that they will try and win, I think that they either need to consolidate their current effort. And that consolidation, I think the only logical conclusion for that is to put up Bobby Kennedy Jr., the person who's polling at 13, 10 to 15%, put him up so that his base is a part of the Democratic Union, and they can win with that. They will take the Democrats that Joe has that are, you know, sticking around with him. He'll combine it with the Bobby Kennedy Democrats. And that is a winning majority. And Bobby Kennedy has done polls against both Trump and against Biden. And he wins both elections straight up against Trump and against Biden. I think that's an important piece to note. He is able to kind of wash his hands of the difficulty of the last 4 years from an economic policy perspective, from a war perspective. He is very much an anti-war candidate. He's trying to make economic sense. He can play those cards much to a much greater degree than what a Kamala Harris can, who is, you know, been proactively involved in this whole thing for the last 4 years. Should they not want to do that, and I would, unfortunately, like, I would bet a lot of money that they don't, you know, consolidate around Bobby Kennedy Jr., I think the next best option is to try and do some type of polling, some type of major nationwide, get people bought into the idea of finding another candidate. What I think will go horribly is to trust the delegates to pick somebody that the American people have not picked themselves. So if they can create, you know, some type of poll, some type of voting system that says, hey, we're in this really dire situation. We need the American people's support to figure out who's going to take this nomination. We're going to forgo the Electoral College in this specific, and we want the American people who are Democrats in our party to tell us, in the absence of Joe Biden, who should we put up as the nominee, and give the people the choice. Because if they give them the choice, then it's much easier to jump in and support that candidate and unite around somebody that people have, you know, have given at least the option to pick. And you could honestly invite Bobby Kennedy to be a part of it. Like, he was running for the Democratic nomination before he went independent. And it was the lack of transparency in the primary process that had RFK not wanting to continue it in and wanting to run independent. If you give Bobby Kennedy Jr. the option to run within this national polling and you're able to pull this off before, let me double check when the DNC convention 2024 is August. So you got a ton of time. You got 2 months to figure this out. Like, you hire 10 really good developers. You put out an app that has some type of identity verification process within it, or maybe that, you know, app exists already and it just needs to be formatted for, you know, a nationwide election of some sort. It doesn't have to be binding. It doesn't have to be, you know, anything too crazy. People just, I believe, need the chance to express their political longings. And should they not be given that opportunity, I believe pretty strongly that the election of 1968 is repeating itself right now. So I think the Democrats have an opportunity to unite themselves, should Joe step aside, to find someone who can embody, you know, a larger, wider tent. But yeah, it's up to them. So that's basically all I had to share. I think it's a really interesting time in American politics. I could be, you know, hypothesizing way to a greater degree than, you know, I should be taking liberties against, because again, when I'm recording this, the previous day it was the debate. And so it's really just the talk of Joe having to step aside from political operatives that I think is why I wanted to discuss this. So thank you very much for listening. I would love to hear your thoughts. Feel free to message me on LinkedIn, message me on Twitter or X. I don't have an Instagram anymore. I got hacked, but yeah, just let me know what you think. I would love to be a part of this political discourse and understand, you know, people's opinions on the current state of the Democratic Party and what they should do moving forward, should they have a serious desire to win this election.